Governor, you signed the voter ID legislation into law, and Attorney General Roy Cooper has already started a petition asking you to veto those measures that you have already signed into law, saying they'll disenfranchise some citizens. What would you say to that, and why did you choose to sign it?
Well, it's kind of interesting that the Attorney General says that when, in fact, just recently, both Democrats and Republicans, including Attorney General Cooper, in supporting legislation to require a valid government-issued photo ID to buy Sudafed at corner drugstores. And no one talked about disenfranchising people to buy Sudafed. And I frankly think our right to vote deserves similar protection that we're giving to Sudafed. So I just find it kind of interesting that those on the left tend to believe that we should a photo ID is good enough for Sudafed, but it's not good enough for the right to vote. I think most people are shocked that an ID is not required to vote at this time. A lot of people bring an ID regardless, and I think it's common sense.
Well, it's kind of interesting because there's so much right now. Some of the criticism is that there's been so little fraud at the polling place. And if there was fraud, the research shows it's an absentee balloting, which historically has favored Republicans. And some suggest the Republicans should have started with absentee balloting where the fraud has been already reported.
Well, one thing we've learned in other types of government and in even insider trading, that if you don't look for fraud, you won't find it. And we've never looked for fraud in North Carolina. And anyone who thinks there isn't fraud in North Carolina are probably the same people who don't think there's fraud in Philadelphia or Chicago or West Virginia, where there's been known fraud. And we're now the 10th largest state in the United States in which tens of millions of dollars are being spent on campaigns. And I think it's rather naive to say there isn't fraud if you don't look for it.
There was substantial reporting on this. News 21 did a nationwide report that was exhaustive and investigative. So there has been research and there has been reporting, and it has shown very little fraud except absentee voting.
Well, again, they haven't looked in North Carolina, and there really hasn't been enforcement. You know, it's like saying until we start looking for a campaign election law irregularities, you've got to look for it to find it. And for many years in North Carolina, we assumed that wasn't happening either, but we found out different in the last 10 years, even with some of my predecessors, that a lot of things were happening. But if you aren't looking for it, you're not going to find it. But I think our right to vote deserves protection, and I think photo ID, which you use to board an airplane, which you use to cash a check, which you use to get Sudafed, which you use to get almost any basic government service, including food stamps, you have to use a picture ID and mainly your driver's license to get that. And I do want to emphasize that we offer photo IDs, even if you don't have a driver's license, at any nearby DMV office, and this law will not be implemented until 2016. So people have plenty of time to ensure they get the right to vote and that no one is disenfranchised, as many of the critics say they will be.
You say that integrity of the process is important, and the reason you signed it, voter ID, picture ID is part of it, but also limiting the amount of time by a week for early voting and eliminating pre-registration for 18-year-olds. How does that protect the integrity of the system?
Well, first of all, we now have the same number of hours available to all voters, because what's happened in the past with 2 weeks of early voting, whatever political party was in control, and I saw this as mayor of Charlotte an awful lot, you had selective early voting precincts opened in certain areas that were dominated by one political party. And now with this new law, we have every political precinct open a week before election, and which has equal access, and the exact number of hours of open precincts will be available now as they were in the last presidential election. It's just combined into 1 week, but it's spread out through whatever metropolitan or rural area you have in North Carolina, where you have many, many more precincts, but they won't be selected based upon politics or political partisan decisions, which is wrong.
It's been a very busy and high-profile session, and one of the most controversial items was abortion regulation. And critics say that you violated a campaign pledge that you made not to sign any additional abortion restrictions into law. You did. How do you respond to their criticism?
I did not. In fact, I'd welcome the specific example that you give. What we're doing is putting health and safety policy into certain clinics, the 9 clinics that we have in North Carolina. And sadly, we have found out the last, since I've been in office, that we have clinics that are not following existing laws. In fact, the clinic that was recently closed in Nashville, I'm sad to say, it was not protecting the health of women. It was terrible. They weren't mopping the floor after individual abortions. And, I mean, those are the worst of standards that no one should have in any type of surgical unit, whether it's for abortions or anything else. And so we haven't even written any new rules. My head of Health and Human Services, Aldona Voss, who is herself a doctor, will be the ones writing the new standards, and their health standards. And we promise, and we've advocated not to close any of these clinics. And that's why I threatened to veto one of the bills, which I think would have done just that. This was a pragmatic, centrist move to protect women and the health of women, which isn't currently being done with at least three facilities in North Carolina, one in Durham, one in Charlotte, and now one in Asheville. And I'd love for you to be able to tell your listeners exactly some of the terrible, terrible violations that are occurring in some of these clinics. And that's not fair, and we shouldn't have to shut them down because it's the law, and we should allow the law to be implemented, but they have to be safe.
This budget that you signed doesn't give teachers pay raises. It eliminates tenure, and it takes away raises for teachers with advanced degrees. There are critics who are saying this is undermining the state's education system.
Well, I'm very disappointed we did not get teacher raises implemented because I asked for that in my budget. But the fact of the matter is we've got a tough financial situation right now. The Medicaid costs in this state are busting our budget. In fact, under Governor Perdue, she estimated a certain amount spent on Medicaid. Those costs are over $500 million more than what she projected. And it was a very harsh underprojection, and we're having to deal with some of those projections from the previous administration. And that basically took money away. We could have given every teacher a 3% pay raise with that money, but that money is no longer there.
Well, legislature turned back federal money that could have reimbursed that. You'd have had it all, and then the teacher pay raises to boot.
I'm not sure what money you're referring to.
Federal Medicaid money that could have been used, hundreds of millions of dollars in federal Medicaid money.
You're actually misrepresenting. The Medicaid money could not have been used for anything but expanded Medicaid. It could not have been used for teachers or anything else. So that's a misrepresentation.
Well, again, if you're talking about money in a Medicaid pot that is not available for
other expenditure. No, but that would have been for new and expanded Medicaid. It would have been, we can't even deal with the existing Medicaid population. So again, I think you need to be accurate in your assessment of the Medicaid expansion. The Medicaid expansion by the federal government is expanding Medicaid way beyond women, elderly, children, and the disabled. And right now, even with that, we're $550 million underfunded. The new federal money only could be used for expanded Medicaid to even more people. And what I'm trying to do is fix the existing system before we expand a system. One thing I've learned both in government and in business is you don't expand a broken system. You fix the broken system first and then determine whether or not you expand it. And that's what I'm attempting to do. And I'll tell you, we've got some broken systems right now that we're putting a lot of effort and time in to fix it. So, because these Medicaid people right now, especially women and children and the elderly, deserve better service and better care.
But it does mean that, half of it in the expansion that you talk about, and you're right, it would have expanded the program. So it's unclear exactly how that would have played out in the big picture.
But no, would we have, know how it would have played.
Well, it would have it expands. So half a million, 500,000 people who would have been eligible for Medicaid aren't now. I mean, what does that say to the people of the state of North Carolina who need this medical care?
Well, you're assuming this is free. And again, I'm passionate about these people, but you're assuming everything is free. And the federal government's deal is not free, very similar to unemployment. With unemployment, for example, it was a loan to the state, and we're still paying back $2.7 billion that my predecessor borrowed from the federal government, and the president is not reneging on this loan. We have to pay it back. So to give the impression that we're turning down money, this is, in most cases, not free money. And in the next 2.5 years, we'd have to start incurring a certain cost of that. And so whenever you're offered something for free, whether it be over a telemarketing or from the federal government, you better ask who's going to be paying the bill in the long run. And we're asking those tough questions.
Now, North Carolina has received a lot of national attention recently. You responded to that New York Times editorial that referred to what was happening here as a demolition derby and criticized your administration. What's your take on what's happening nationally and the view of North Carolina, and what impact do you think it'll have on the business climate and others here in the state?
Well, first of all, it has no impact. A New York Times editorial writer, by one writer, by the way, has no impact. And by the way, we've had some very good writings from Forbes magazine and the Wall Street Journal. So the N and O in this town tends to only mention the New York Times. But, you know, that, listen, there's people who agree and disagree with some of our actions. There's fair debate. These are tough issues. But I know one thing is if we continue the policies that we've been doing for the past 5 years in North Carolina, we're going to continue to have the same results, and that's the fifth highest unemployment rate in the country. And that's not the North Carolina I grew up in, and that's not the North Carolina I want. And we're going to try new policies and innovative policies, and that's why Sharon Decker, my Commerce Secretary, is reviving the Commerce Department. That's why DOT under Tony Tata is implementing a major policy change in transportation so we get bigger bang out of our dollar to build new roads, and a policy that's been very ineffective in North Carolina since 1988. We changed that policy, and it's you're not getting headlines in the New York Journal and even our local papers about it, but I'm telling you, it's good, solid, common-sense policy, and I'm very proud of it.
Of all the items on your desk, the legislation that has not been signed yet, what do you think is most important? What's tops on your list?
Well, I'm reviewing. In fact, I've still got over 35 bills to sign, and this week and next week, going to be reviewing which bills I'm going to veto. I think some bills go too far, and frankly, were very poorly written. And I've expressed that feedback, and I'm going to be giving more detail on that. And that I'm going to be stepping on the toes of both the right and the left this coming week on some bills that I'm reviewing right now. But what I'm trying to do is find a pragmatic reason to continue to govern this state in an effective way and in a new way, because the past way has not worked. And my goal is to get people jobs and to have more efficient and effective government, and to also look at how we're educating our children to have more effective results. So I'm kind of stepping on the toes of both the right and the left, just like I did when I was mayor of Charlotte. And I'm not doing it to cause pain. I'm getting people to recognize that we've got some serious problems and we've got to look for new ways to do things.
All right, Governor, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.